Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday morning MV Pro Call. Today is February 27th, and I'd like to welcome those of you that are here live, as well as those of you listening to this via recording, which, of course, you can do by subscribing to Motor Vitality on whatever podcast application you happen to use, or by visiting MotorVitality.com, where you can listen to years and years and years worth of archives. Did want to make mention here, because we were talking about this right before the we started recording here, that we have now made, so it used to be a member exclusive for you to go in and listen to all the old archived calls. Also, the members would were required to log in and have a membership in order to get access to some of the member exclusive webinars and videos and things that we've done in the past. We have eliminated the membership requirement on MotorVitality.com. So you should have access to all of those things. If you do not, then let me know, and I can make sure that you do, because sometimes it means going in the back end and doing all that stuff. It's still a work in progress to take all that stuff off. So if you're looking for that, let me know, and we'll get you taken care of. And I'm talking to you, Paul. So
thank you, sir. Thank you.
I will make that happen. Also, we'll start the call off the way I do pretty much every week, which is by asking, was there anything anybody learned this last week that you wish you had known before? Anything that happened that is worthy of sharing with other professionals across the country, or anything we can help you with? Any questions you might have?
So I have a question.
Sure.
And so I came into the industry in 2017, so I've been doing it a little while, but I still feel like a rookie because I still feel like I learn things every single week. And when I came in 2017, the conversation had just started in its infancy with the forever chemicals, the PFAS. Can you remember, like, when that started, like, becoming a conversation? I know it had to be before 2017.
So for me, the first time, so I've been going to DC with WQA now for about 8 years, and which would, I guess, be what, 2016, 2017, right in there. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, the first time I went, nobody knew what it was, and I'm in Michigan. So, you know, it's interesting because we were meeting with Michigan representatives, and Michigan was one of the first states to start testing for it and really putting it out there and seeing it was a problem because you have military bases here. But it was interesting, Scott, I didn't, you know, when we went to D.C. and sat down and talked to legislators, even in Michigan, they didn't know what it was. So the first time it came on my radar was the first time I went to DC, and because it was part of the bullet points, WQA was trying to build awareness. And none of the legislators there knew what it was. They had no idea what PFAS was back in 2016. So, now everybody does, you know, it's become such a major thing. You've had the movies with the WQA at the PFAS symposium. But I think you're about right. I think it was right around the same time you came into the industry, which if I were you, I would, you know, the coincidence, I would take credit for everybody now being aware of it. So thank you, Scott.
Oh, yeah. You're very welcome. Well, the reason I'm bringing that up is, so from the research that I've done, the documentaries that I've seen, I mean, you can, like, do a deeper dive on, like, what PFAS are. They've been dumping it in the water since, what, the 40s? To find a blood sample that didn't have it in it, they had to go back to the GIs that were entering the Korean War.
Yeah.
So it would go on for that long and for us to just be aware of it. Now, the city, the water quality report that they're supposed to do every year, they're monitoring, what, about 60 things. And I was training one of my new sales reps last week, and I stole your idea, and we went to a local grocery store, and went down the aisle of looking at all the different cleaners for Limescale and soap scum and laundry and softeners. And it just occurred to me, like, think of like all of those chemicals that are in all of those cleaners. And a lot of them are not showing up on that water quality report. Be sure that you've always helped me with my word tracks, that I'm trying to give information without scaring people. But reverse osmosis reduces all contaminants across the level. And I mean, some have different rejection rates than others, but as a rule, doesn't all contaminants are reduced by reverse osmosis, correct?
I'd be hesitant to say all, but I would say many, certainly. I mean, reverse osmosis is absolutely going to give you peace of mind. So, you know, go ahead, and then I have a comment to respond. But go ahead, finish.
Well, in my head, it seems like, you know, it's an insurance policy that if you want the best quality water for you and your family, reverse osmosis reduces all contaminants across the board, whether they know about it or whether they don't. Is that
even
accurate?
The stuff that we don't yet know about. I would say that is kind of the way I approach it, is it is peace of mind, even because there, and I think your point is a solid one, that there are things out there. They refer to those as emerging contaminants. In fact, it brings to mind a couple years ago. It's been 3 or 4 years. You can find it in the archives on, you know, for this call. But we had Larry Gottlieb, who's the, you know, president and CEO of ResinTech, owner of ResinTech, and he was on as a guest and was talking about these emerging contaminants and how. Through the, you know, because ResinTech, they make media based on the demand, right? So the contaminants that are out there, you know, they, you know, what do they need to make media that's going to treat, you know? And it was just a really interesting conversation because PFAS was really coming to the forefront of it, and they were working, ResinTech was working on their PFAS media. And, you know, I had asked him, with all the time that he's been in the industry, what did he, you know, what surprised him? You know, what does he see coming down the forefront? What are they working on? What type of media are they working on treating? And it's, that's one of the things that makes this industry so interesting, is that we, you know, there's so many things. I mean, for a long time, you know, Larry said that for the longest time, he thought that the problem was going to be pharmaceuticals, you know, you know, from dumping medicines, because I don't know if you guys remember, Scott, it may have been a little bit before you came in the industry. You came in right around the time that PFAS sort of became the big buzzword, although probably you heard lead as well, because lead was, you know, Flint, Michigan allowed lead to pop up there and become sort of commonplace as well. But prior to that, it was a lot of, you know, in the 27 years I've been doing this, I remember when MTBE was a big issue, you know, that was out there. Arsenic, of course, was, you know, was the big buzz for several years before they lowered the standards on that. And then there were pharmaceuticals, and then you had lead because of Flint, and now it's PFAS. And I think that you might start to see 1,4-dioxane, you know, coming up here. So to your point, there are so many natural and man-made chemicals out there that we're dumping into our water supplies, onto the ground, and there's no way testing can keep up with the health impacts or the aesthetic impacts or whatever those impacts are. And so I think our industry does provide that. I love the way you say that, the insurance policy. You know, reverse osmosis, catalytic carbon, you know, even ion exchange, you know, those technologies at point of use or point of entry is the answer to providing peace of mind for both known and unknown contaminants. So I think that that's a solid approach. What do you guys, what's everybody else think on that? Do you, would you agree with that, that that's peace of mind, kind of an insurance policy? Anybody else have a thought on that?
I apologize. I got lost in something else. But if I think I know that you, what you were talking about, reverse osmosis is great technology, but there are additional filters that should be added for certain contaminants. Not all reverse osmosis is the same. Definitely.
That's a good point, right? Because for arsenic, for example, and you alluded to this, Scott, the percentages of things that can be reduced, you know, vary, right? So, you know, if I've got arsenic 3, trivalent arsenic, for example, most reverse osmosis systems, the membrane technology is only going to take out 40 to 60% of that. And so an arsenic cartridge, you know, an add-on arsenic-specific or PFAS-specific cartridge, you know, for those known contaminants. But I think to your point on the unknowns, yeah, I'd start with RO because it is going to likely reduce some of it. And then, you know, you may need additional treatment as we discover what those things are. So yeah, that's a good point, Paul.
So what about nitrate? Because I know nitrates have a lower reduction rate with reverse osmosis. What would you do with nitrates in the water?
Well, certainly a nitrate specific media. I mean, nitrates, you know, you can put an anion, you can put a DI filter on after, you know, after the RO, and that will help reduce those nitrates down, you know, so get you pretty low. But you know, there are nitrate-specific cartridges, you know, little filters that you can put on, so that would be a prime example of that. And nitrates are, you know, the issue with nitrates and RO is that it will, you know, even if it initially rejects the nitrate or nitrite, you tend on most ROs to have, you know, the nitrate creep, right, or TDS creep, and especially if you have, you know, if you've got a large, it's especially a big concern if you have a larger storage tank. You know, so I put in a 10-gallon storage tank with a family of three, and they're hardly ever pulling all the water out of that tank. Now you have not only TDS, but things like nitrate, and, you know, you've got stuff creeping into that because you've not emptied the tank out, and you know, you've still got pressure on the membrane. So a lot of, you know, you, even though it initially rejected it, now it's creeping through. And that's one of the big issues. You know, if you have something, a contaminant like that, you want to make sure that you're sizing the storage tank. And this comes from understanding how RO works and, you know, what the, you know, what size is appropriate, what size storage tank, maybe putting, you know, there are a couple of reverse osmosis systems out there that rinse the membrane when the system shuts off. Maybe making sure that you a permeate pump or something that is going to reduce the back pressure. You know, I mean, there are different things that you can do to increase production and rejection on you know, for certain contaminants, but yeah, it's understanding the technology. It's RO is not a one size fits all, fix everything solution, as Paul mentioned.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, no, it's great. I appreciate that. So it's a great comment. Anybody else have anything to add on that? So we've got about 15 minutes here left, and the topic I wanted to kind of discuss today. I was having a conversation, so we've got a class in this week, for a custom class for a couple guys that are coming in and starting a water treatment dealership. So they're building it up, and we were talking about, you know, how do you create business? How do you get out there and generate? And I was kind of sharing some of my experience from when I was in sales. And the question that I had was, you know, I kind of wanted to have a conversation with you guys on is how much do you do for free, if you will? Okay, so let me kind of direct you on what I mean by that. When I first started in sales, I mean, it was every opportunity I had to get in a home and test the water and, you know, get in front of a customer. My thought was, I'm going to earn referrals, right? I'm going to get out there and earn referrals. So somebody, I ran across somebody that had bought a softener from Home Depot. I went out there and I checked the water and I tested it for them and I did all kinds of stuff. I don't know how much I would do that anymore. I know when I first started, I would go out there because my thought was I'd get referrals. And I did get referrals from that stuff sometimes. Not nearly, you know, I'd have to go back. I look at, you know, how many times do you go out there and you do something like that for free for somebody, you know, testing the water and explaining everything to them and all of that, you know, when they bought a softener from somebody else, you know, in hopes that you get a referral. What percentage of those do you get referrals from? Probably pretty low. And when I first started, I was out there in every instance, everything. And I think about the time that did reap benefits. I'm not going to go into the whole long detail about this, but there was a well driller that I worked with, and they used to, you know, they had sold softeners for a long time. And I stumbled across them and had an opportunity. I basically called them and I said, you know, you guys are no longer selling softeners. I mean, the guy that had sold softeners for them had moved and gone away and to another town. And they had all these, Fleck equipment out, like 5600s and 9000s. And the company that I worked for, we also carried those. And so I called them up and I said, you know, you guys, who's going to be doing your service? And they said, yeah, we don't really know. And I said, well, you know, if you guys have somebody calls in, you know, that needs service, then have them call my cell phone and, you know, we can probably get stuff covered under warranty in a lot of cases if it's less than 5 years old, you know, Fleck is Fleck is Fleck, right? So I told them to call my cell. And it wasn't very long before I started getting a few calls. You know, these well drillers, they had put out quite a few softeners, but they put those softeners out at the same time they dug the well, which was 2-3 months sometimes before customers moved into the house. So it was not uncommon for customers to know, you know, to not have an idea, not have any clue what the softener did. They thought it was part of the well, you know, because it was all there. Nobody had ever come in, done a soap demonstration, explained to them to use less, you know, explained to them how the system worked. The other thing that I had, you know, kind of discovered was that when they were putting them in, when they installed them, the guy that had put them in sort of left them at factory defaults, which means that he was putting these softeners in and not really understanding how to set them or adjust them. So there were a ton of systems out there that were cleaning, say, every 1,200 gallons when they really needed to be cleaning every 600 gallons. And so obviously they're getting a lot of bleed through and stuff like that. So I started getting these calls from their customers. And I would tell the customers, hey, you know, we can set you up with a service call that's going to cost you, you know, the service charge. But that should be all it is if there's any parts or anything like that. Or if you want, I can swing out there. I'm not a service guy, but if it's something simple, I can take a look at it and explain to you kind of how the stuff works. A lot of times that needed to happen on evenings and weekends when both the husband and wife were home. And the one thing I can tell you about the well drillers, they never sold an RO. So I thought, okay, I'll have an opportunity to get in there and maybe sell an RO. So I would go out and schedule these calls, and I would spend a lot of time. And it was amazing to me, everybody, every customer, all them out rather than the service guys, because I didn't charge them anything. And in almost every instance, these softeners were working fine. They just needed to be set right. You know, so I would go out, I would set them, I would explain them and, you know, explain the entire system to the customer. On a rare occasion, I did sell an RO, you know, not very many. It was not uncommon at all for people to offer me, you know, man, can I give you anything? Do I owe you anything at all? And I would always just, when I left, just say, just call a well driller tomorrow and thank them for recommending me. And it was kind of incredible that a lot of the people did end up doing that. I started getting more and more of these calls from the well driller. And it took, I mean, I remember one time, you know, when we hire and interview salespeople often ask me, what's the hardest part of the job? And from my own experience, I would tell them, it's having to go out and leave in those evenings, those nights, or those weekends when you know there's likely not going to be a sale, but you still got to go anyway. And I remember one particular evening, my daughter, you know, I had one of these calls. It was coming up like at 7 o'clock that night, you know, and my daughter asked me, "Daddy, will you tuck me in tonight?" Which was, you know, it was, I couldn't because I had to go do one of these. I had scheduled one of these explanation calls where they had already had equipment they bought from somebody else. They already had equipment there. And I went out there and I had to tell my daughter, "No, I can't tuck you in tonight because I got to go work." And, you know, that was always the hardest part. And it was hard. That was really super hard to do that. And there were so many times that I wanted to call and cancel. And I don't think I ever did. I did that for 6 or 8 months. And then one time just out of the blue, it's like the dam broke. I get this call from this huge builder that had worked with this well driller. And I ended up going out in these gargantuan houses and and I put in these huge commercial systems in two of the houses. I mean, I think they were like $35,000 sales each. And also I got every builder. So literally when that dam broke from working from that well driller, it added 150 to 200 units a year in my sales. So I went from the very first year I was in sales, I did about 150 units a year that first year. After that, after I had the relationship with this well driller, I never did less than 340 units a year, and easily 175 to 200 units a year came from referrals from this well driller. And so I often look at that and I think back to all those nights, all those weekends that I went out there and did these free calls, and I don't know how smart it was. You know, I mean, for me, it worked out, right? I mean, I ended up getting this huge, I mean, it supported my family by doing that. But man, the first 6, 7, 8 months, and I think about that sometimes, like was that, I mean, I'm not a professional visitor, and I don't know sometimes how to make that recommendation to new salespeople. You know, do you do that? Because there's no guarantee that you're going to stumble across those types of relationships. You know, those types of, to have that dam break like that. But, you know, for me, it worked out really well. And so I wanted to kind of pose it to you guys. You know, how much, I mean, we're not professional visitors, right? We have to get paid for our work. I was straight commission. My logic was, as long as I have time, if I don't have another appointment out there, every opportunity I have to get in front of a customer is going to reap the benefits, right? I'm going to learn from it. It's a chance for referrals. You know, I think I will tell you, once I got busy enough to where I had several appointments a week, you know, created appointments, self-generated appointments, stuff like that, I didn't have time to go out and do those types of things anymore. But when I was brand new and I didn't have appointments every night, it was sit home. You know, maybe tuck my daughter in. Maybe, you know, maybe that's what I should have done. Or it was go out and try and earn these referrals and get in a home and test the water and stuff like that. So I don't know. What do you guys think? How do you, you know, I got to be honest with you. I don't know if I would have the energy or the drive today. We talked about enthusiasm. You know, I don't know if I would have that energy or drive today to do that. And I don't know if you know, so I'm wondering, what do you guys think? I mean, where do you draw the line on what you do without, you know, knowing that there's not a direct line towards revenue? You know, what do you do for that stuff? What's your thoughts on that? Anybody?
It's a big ask in a short period of time.
Yeah.
We need to revisit the topic.
Well, we got a couple minutes. Go, give me your top level idea on that, Paul.
I wish I had one. My mind is just a little foggy in regards to the whole concept and the tiredness and what do we do. We are fortunate that we've been established for as long as we have.
Right.
My guys
right.
aren't knocking on doors. They're not doing bottle drops. We had 61,000 phone calls come across our facility last year. 61,000 phone calls. We installed over 2,600 pieces of new equipment.
Yeah. That's
I want
incredible.
More. You know, I had a meeting with my team explaining to them how, you know, big we kind of are. In
yeah.
regards to that. 61,000 phone calls.
That's
you know,
pretty
35,000
yeah.
individual customers buying things from us in our locations.
Yeah.
We're a pretty busy place. So I wish my guys did more because I think that they could do better. They tell me they work 24/7 and, you know, maybe they do take a phone call on a Sunday, but it's not very
mm-hmm.
often. And I know they're home
yeah.
at 4 o'clock
yeah.
in the daytime. You know, they're not doing evening appointments. They're not doing weekends appointments.
Yeah.
It's like, that's part of the business, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's when people are home. Yeah.
Yeah.
Scott, you're in sales. What's your thought?
It's tough because, you know, all of our leads are provided. And to have the time and to think of trying to do the process is you don't want to set unrealistic expectations and have the possibility of disappointing somebody. I don't know. It's a slippery slope.
Yeah. You know, as a sales manager, I don't know if I could in good conscience ask people to do what I did at the level that I did it. You know what I mean? That's the thing. And so I think there's some sort of a balance there. You know, how do you, I mean, you, I think there, you don't just say, I'm taking every house lead. I mean, hopefully you have people out there that are willing to go out and help and do, you know, do things. But I think I could say, look, I did this and I could certainly be impressed if somebody else chose to do it. But I don't know if I would require that type of thing as a, you know, as a manager, because it seems over and beyond, you know, what normal. I mean, I'm just stupid. You know, I'm like, I don't know. I'm not always the sharpest tool in the shed, you know. So I don't know. It was just interesting. So, all right, food for thought, you guys. As Paul said, something to kind of think about. I'd be interested in anybody's thoughts on it, you know, and what you're, you know, what you think. Any final comments on that before we finish up today on it? You guys are all just sort of dumbfounded. Okay, so before I forget here, the last minute, I did forget to mention this at the top of the call. Next week we do have a guest speaker, so we have. Angie, I can't remember her last name, but she is from WQA, and she is going to be coming on and talking about all the changes at the convention and why the changes are there and some of those the things that WQA is thinking about. So it's going to be kind of interesting, even if you're not making it to convention. I think you'll find some value in kind of the direction WQA is going with their classes and education and the conventions and those sorts of things. So please join us. That's next week. Any final thoughts? All right, everybody. I appreciate you very much. Thanks so much for hopping on. We will talk to you next week, if not before. Okay. So thanks, everybody. Be safe.
Have a good day.